You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome in hour two of the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, the 19th, the O Radix Jesse, O Root of Jesse edition, part of the O Antiphons, those seven titles of Christ that we go through December 17th through 23rd every year in preparation for the Feast of the Nativity. Time is pressing on, and Advent is coming to a close, not too late to ready our hearts for the greatest gift the world has ever seen. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in or be part of the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. The bottom of the hour, my guest will be Tom Zampino. Tom, who is a New York City-based attorney, lives on Long Island, someone who left the church angrily, and we'll talk about his story at the bottom of the hour, when he was 14 years old. And found his way back to the faith. A door cracked, really, in his hardened heart by the ministry of Joel Osteen. Now, Mr. Zampino will tell you and go through a great description of the problems with some of Joel Osteen, the very telegenic prosperity preacher, with his theology. Yet, at the same time, as Zampino said, he cracked a door open for me and led to my eventual return to the Catholic faith. So we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. Pretty fascinating testimony, I think. And I'm asking the question of the day related to that. What do you think of Joel Osteen? 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. As I said, I guess I tend to be, and maybe this is foolish of me. It wouldn't be the first time I've been foolish. I tend to be a little bit less, I tend to try to give people the benefit of the doubt a little bit more when it comes to preachers, Protestant preachers. I know that there is a tendency to make caricatures and to believe the worst. I understand that from both sides of the Tiber, the river that runs through Rome, because my journey to the Catholic Church, I certainly discovered along the way how many false notions of Catholicism were out there among my Protestant evangelical brothers and sisters, and even that I myself had held on to, only to have a lot of those misconceptions and presuppositions shattered and made me rethink my view of Catholicism. Once I became Catholic, I have discovered inside the Catholic Church lots of, I think, misconceptions, bad faith beliefs, I guess you could say, about people who are not Catholic, about evangelicals. And almost from a sort of a triumphalistic, superior Catholic position. And yes, the Catholic faith is the fullness of the Christian faith, no question. That's why I'm Catholic. But at the same time, I think we can acknowledge degrees of truth where we find it, particularly among those who are well-intentioned. And I think that's the case with Joel Osteen. I think he's well-intentioned. I think he's wrong on some very key things, but I do think he's well-intentioned. So I usually cut folks a little more slack. It's kind of my same philosophy toward the song, Mary, Did You Know? I find my Facebook feed filled with just Catholic loathers of that song, and I can't loathe this song. Yeah, are there theologically problematic things in the song? Sure, yes, there are. But there's a lot more beauty to the song as a reflection coming from Protestants about the Blessed Mother. So please, folks, let's not complain so much. Anyway, so my question of the day is, what do you think of Joel Osteen? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Gotten a lot of comments on this on social media, which is always an option. In fact, my friend Tim on Twitter, all he responded was a little bag with a dollar sign on the front. Yes, Mr. Osteen's done quite well for himself, no doubt about it. I hope you had a great weekend. I got the privilege of going to see my sister's son, my nephew Jacob, marry his fiancée Brooke this weekend down in Raleigh, North Carolina. Of course, our oldest daughter, our 24-year-old Chelsea, lives down there, so it was also an opportunity to see her, which was nice. We all went to the wedding together, but the other eight of us, our other six children, between the ages of 11 and 22, we all headed down, and because we are not in a good situation vehicle-wise right now, my newest car is a 2001 Ford Taurus with a blown head gasket. A couple of my daughter's own cars, but I thought, let's just, and I've done this before, let's just rent a couple of cars. It's really when you factor in a whole host of things, particularly weekend rates from rental companies, it's not typically a bad deal. So went to the counter at my typical rental car place, had the cars reserved. You know, usually get something like a Chevy Cruze or a Toyota Corolla, which is, you know, they get excellent gas mileage. Was there to pick up the vehicles, and the woman behind the counter said, "Well, you know, would you like a free upgrade?" And I said, "You didn't hear that word upgrade." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, you know, we're kind of a little short. We don't have as many of our mid-sized cars. Could I interest you for no charge in your wife and you driving a couple of Dodge Chargers?" Dodge Charger, I thought. Of course, the economical side of me protested with concerns about the gas mileage. But then you know what the other part of me was thinking? Just a good old boys. Never meet my wife and I cruising 8 hours through West Virginia, North Carolina in a couple of Dodge Chargers. Muscle cars. You got it. So we took the cars. So we were driving down there Friday, making great time. And you know where I'm going with this probably. Going through Virginia, it was a little bit of a windy. You go through some mountains there, right? And unbeknownst to me, the speed limit had dropped to 65. Now, I try to adhere to the famous dictum that I've been told is true by state troopers. 9, you're fine. 10, you're mine. You know what I mean? So I was trying to keep it usually about 7 or 8 miles an hour above the speed limit. And I didn't realize it had dropped down to 65. And I had also, because it was kind of in and out, weaving around some cars going through this mountain sort of pass, that I had taken off the cruise control, which is what I usually set it on. And wouldn't you know it, just about the time I glanced down and noticed that my speed has creeped up to 81, I pass a trooper strategically tucked into the median watching traffic go by. And, of course, like I said, I didn't realize it was a 65. I'm going 81, and I'm like, I immediately have that sinking feeling. It's been a number of years since I've gotten a ticket. But sure enough, I saw him pull out, throw on his lights, and I just knew. I just knew it was me. And sure enough, it was. And so there I sat on the side of the road, with the trooper talking to me. He said he'd do me a favor and knock a few MPHs off the total, so my ticket would only be $140, which actually was less than I expected it to be. But, man, you know, try to save a few minutes of drive time and cost yourself. And I can't help but think, the irony, of course, is I can't help but think of the fact that there was that Dodge Charger that just invited police scrutiny, because it's a pretty nice looking automobile and very smooth riding, I will say. Definitely enjoyed that, but not the ticket part. 5734 Bread 4. By the way, you get into the reading today for the mass readings for Monday, December 19th. You forget sometimes in the midst of this season of anticipation that there is more than one infancy narrative in play. When you read particularly the Gospel of Luke, you have twin infancy narratives. You've got, of course, the infancy narrative of Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. But you have interwoven in the Gospel of Luke the infancy narrative of John the Baptist. And it's interesting how they sort of weave, you know, it's like a TV show that has two or three storylines going on in one time and that interweaves between them as the show progresses. The early chapters of the Gospel of Luke, very much like that. You have this interweaving of Zechariah and Elizabeth on the one hand, Mary and Joseph on the other, and these various points at which their lives and their fates intersect. But Luke 1, today's passage, in the days of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah. He was from the, his wife was from the daughters of Aaron. He himself also of a priestly line. His wife's name, Elizabeth. They were both righteous in the eyes of God, observing all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blamelessly, but they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and both were advanced in years. And so the story goes, Luke chapter 1, that Zechariah was serving as priest. It was his division's turn before God, and he was chosen by lot, according to the practice of the priestly service, to enter the sanctuary of the Lord to burn incense. There was this inside the temple, of course. And it's fascinating sometimes to do a study on the early tabernacle that was built by the traveling Jews, and then the temple when it was finally dedicated. When you see the similar patterns between the tabernacle and temple and a Catholic church and the Catholic Mass, again, because you can't really understand Old and New Testament in isolation from each other. We'll get into this on the other side of the break, but I love this encounter Zechariah has with the angel. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in, be a part of the program today, call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post your thought on Facebook or Twitter. I'm asking a question today. What do you think of Joel Osteen? We'll talk to Tom Zampino at the bottom of the hour of the fact that Joel Osteen, while certainly Mr. Zampino sees very problematic aspects of Osteen's teaching, he does say that Joel Osteen opened a door to him that led to his return to the Catholic faith. So we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. Bonnie sends me an email, says, I feel bad saying this, but he turns me, meaning Osteen, he turns me away from everything good. I have friends that watch him, and I think to myself, are you kidding? He is such a fake. I'm glad you're talking about this to help me understand the good in him, but we'll never watch him. Well, I'm not endorsing that people watch him. I'm just trying to say, you know, I think there are things that we can learn here from him, and I don't think he is entirely bad. Few people are. Interesting little thing I came across here, 10 things you might not know about evangelical leader Joel Osteen. This is from Newsmax.com. He lives in a $10.5 million home, which boasts 6 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, 3 elevators, 5 fireplaces, a guest house, and a pool house. And he also owns his former home valued at $2.9 million, according to Culture Map Houston. Some critics take issue with this fact. Yes, I would imagine they do. His estimated net worth is over $40 million. His book sales and related stuff generate a reported $55 million and claims an individual should not feel guilt for possessing lots of material wealth. Instead, one needs to thank and praise God for the acquired wealth. Well, I mean, again, as you say, he's consistent with what he says he believes. Number three, he no longer takes his $200,000 salary from the Lakewood Church. Again, with his book deals and television deals and all the rest, no need for it. Prior to becoming a pastor, Osteen had a fear of public speaking, Forbes reported. I've seen that before, right? And let's see, just a couple of other things. Once he became the pastor after the death of his father, John, Lakewood quickly quadrupled its membership. His first book, Your Best Life Now, Seven Steps to Living at Your Full Potential, has since sold more than 10 million copies, according to the Star-Telegram. He met his wife, Victoria, at a jewelry store. One of the controversies about his services that includes no crosses or religious symbols at all, which is one aspect of his ministry that sparks frequent intense debate among other Christians. The Reverend Michael Horton, professor of theology at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California, said, I think it's cotton candy gospel. His core message is, God is nice, you're nice, be nice. If it were a form of music, I think it would be easy listening. He uses the Bible like a fortune cookie. This is what's going to happen for you. There's going to be a windfall in your life tomorrow. The Bible's not meant to be read that way. One of the funnier things that I've seen has been the, I think there's an internet thing going around of something like quotes from Joel Osteen being read by the martyrs of the faith. Now, that's creative criticism, in my opinion. That's not bad at all. But like I said, Tom Zampino will share with us at the bottom of the hour how God used Joel Osteen to open a door that brought him back to the Catholic faith. We were talking in the first segment about the twin infancy narratives. Today's reading from the Gospel of Luke in the Mass from Luke chapter 1, verses 5 through 25. It's interesting because the Old Testament reading, or the first reading for today, is from the book of Judges that talks about the miraculous, or the, let's just say, the God-ordained birth of Samson, following a fairly typical pattern in salvation history. Samson, this judge who reigned, a man of great strength and weakness, of course, like all tragic heroes, but Samson, born to a woman who had been barren, but has a visitation from an angel. The wife of Manoah, who says, the angel to her, though you are barren and have had no children, yet you will conceive and bear a son. Now then, be careful to take no wine or strong drink and eat nothing unclean. As for the son you will conceive and bear, no razor shall touch his head, for this boy is to be consecrated to God from the womb. It is he who will begin the deliverance of Israel from the power of the Philistines. So you have Samson, who from before his birth is pledged to what's called a Nazarite vow. It's the same vow that Zechariah and Elizabeth would have for their son by the command of the angel. So not only do we see these supernaturally influenced births of significant babies throughout Old Testament salvation history that serve as a foreshadowing of the birth of Christ, they also serve as a foreshadowing of the birth of John. Thus, in Luke's gospel, these twin infancy narratives. But Herod, chilling words here that begin this gospel reading for today, in the days of Herod, that would evoke, you know, it'd be kind of like Syrians one day, you know, saying in the days of Assad. It would evoke a certain sense of darkness to live in the days of Herod, this pretentious, self-professed king of the Jews, who in fact was a tool of the Romans and corrupt and sold out his own people. The days of Herod. But it was during this season that Zechariah goes in to pray. The angel appears to him there as he offers the incense offering of prayers in the temple, according to his turn and role as a priest before God. And the angel appears, the angel Gabriel, the same one who will appear later in this chapter to a young virgin in Nazareth. And always am fascinated by this line, but the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah, because your prayer has been heard. I remember the first time that it occurred to me that I had assumed way too much about what that even meant. Do not be afraid because your prayer has been heard. I think it immediately raises a question. What was his prayer? Instinctively, we assume that because we're told that Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth were advanced in years and were without a child, that the prayer must have been for a son or for a child, for Elizabeth's womb to be opened. But you have to wonder at this point, were Zechariah and Elizabeth still praying for that? Perhaps the prayer was something different, but Zechariah was in the temple as a part of his priestly duties. He was offering prayers to burn incense, and that sign of prayers rising as a fragrant aroma to God as a part of the sacrifice. The whole assembly of the people were praying outside. He was representing them by his prayers. Do you really think at the table of incense, his primary prayer was, Lord, give my barren wife a child? Or were they praying for the deliverance of Israel from her enemies, from the occupying forces of the Romans, for the messianic promise to be fulfilled? When the angel says, because your prayer has been heard, what was it Zechariah was praying for? Now, the beautiful thing is we don't have to definitively answer that question, because in one fell swoop, the angel answers both prayers in one reality, in one conception, the gift of John. John, who would answer both his prayers for a child as well as have a hand in the deliverance of his people Israel. John, the forerunner of the Christ, his relative. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall name him John, and you will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth. Now, always keep in mind, and I think this is an important note, is that for Zechariah to be faithful, and his role as the father of this child would require some great personal sacrifice. Again, he as a priest received that role as an inheritance through his genealogical line. He was a priest. I'm sure if he ever had a son, he imagined and assumed that that son, like him, would be a priest, maybe even bear his name. But in the message of the angel and the mission that this baby would have to go before the Messiah in the spirit and power of Elijah, he would not be a priest, but he would be a prophet. And by taking the name John, which no one in Zechariah's family, a name that none of them had had, Zechariah was surrendering at an even deeper level his parental assumptions about what his son would be. I always find inspiration in Zechariah, to be honest with you, even if he had to learn it through his own angelically appointed silence, that as a parent, where I have so many assumptions of who my child and children will be and what they will do, how often I need to lay that down and simply say, as the Blessed Mother did, behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be done unto me according to your word. There's a great beauty in these interwoven infancy narratives in Luke's gospel. Check them out sometime. We'll be back in a minute with Tom Zampino. We'll talk a little bit more about Joel Osteen, how he cracked open a door for his return to the faith. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday the 19th. Pleased to have with me via phone from Long Island, Tom Zampino. He's an attorney in private practice in New York City who makes his home on Long Island. He and his beautiful wife have raised two fantastic daughters, four cats, two dogs, and various other domesticated creatures over the past three decades. He formerly blogged at the Catholic Channel at Patheos. Now he has a blog called Grace Pending, and he's part of a group called the Catholic Conspiracy. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about the idea behind the Catholic Conspiracy.
Well, it was actually a group of several of us who worked at Patheos, and we decided to kind of split off and start our own group. Rebecca is and Larry D are the two main people. We are pleased that we have March Fenelon has just joined us recently, and so we have it's a growing blog. It's just a way of bringing Christ to the world. We decided that it was having our own blog, having our own set of writers was the way to go.
Well, I love the piece that you've written here, and you got a lot of great stuff at Grace Pending and also through the Catholic Conspiracy. But this one about Joel Osteen, I've been talking a little bit about him today. He tends to provoke not very neutral opinions, for sure, but he's also wildly popular and successful at what he does. And a piece that you have here called Joel Osteen Held Open a Door for Me. Let's talk just for a minute about your journey out of the church, because you say it you left the church at a fairly young age.
Yes, I left at 14. There was a situation that came up that had me really concerned, and I just left at age 14, did not turn back, and wandered for many, many years looking, basically not joining any church, not being part of any group, but never considered myself an atheist or an agnostic, but didn't feel comfortable being at the church. In fact, at some point, I became very anti-Catholic church. I was I had very, very strong anti-Catholic feelings. And over the years, as my heart softened a bit, and I remember one day turning the TV on and catching a glimpse of this smiling preacher. I didn't know who he was, and I listened to him for a minute or two, probably kept on changing the channel, but I was drawn back. And at some point, I came back and I started watching the show, watching the preaching that took place from Texas, and it intrigued me. And he had seemed like a sincere, warm heart, and the message that was coming through was, God loves you, you're a success, there are good things in this world, and that was the message that was coming through, and it kind of warmed my heart. It made me think about coming back to joining a church, not mm-hmm. the church, but a church. And what Joel Osteen always said at the end of the broadcast was, join a Bible-based church. And so after a couple of years, I didn't want to be alone anymore. I actually joined a non-denominational church on Long Island, felt fit right in. There were great people, very comfortable there. I was warmly welcomed. And I spent a couple of years there. And that was the beginning of sort of heading on back. And I would continually watch Joel Osteen on TV, watch the Easter services that he did. And as I started to get more and more deeply involved, I started to recognize that the message that Joel was touting was not exactly what was the true message. And as I got more and more involved, one day when Francis became Pope, on that very day, something changed in me, something triggered, and I said, I need to think about this some more and come back. And so I started the journey back by reading and thinking about what the church really meant. And over a period of time, I decided that that's really where I belonged.
So now the family that you grew up in, you said you left at 14. Was your family still actively practicing the faith? Did you have a Monica type of mom who was concerned about you?
Very much so, and I think she's probably listening right now. that was a concern. But you know, both my mom and dad. My dad passed away a couple of years back. They were concerned, but they gave me the room to grow and be as I needed to be. And I know my mom was concerned, but over time, and the rest of my family had stayed in the Catholic Church. Over time, it was just maybe it was the St. Monica prayers.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it, because I guarantee you, and if you went to a a church that you were guided by Joel Osteen, you said to join a Bible-based church. You went to some Joel Osteen events. You of course watched him on television. My guess is, if you look in the huge thousands of people that are there in his congregation at Lakewood, or the people who follow him, read his books, probably a lot of former Catholics in that mix. What is it that Joel Osteen does, do you think, that connects with people who, for whatever reason, have found themselves alienated or estranged from the church?
What a great question. I think that he brings a positive energy that people feel. It's sort of like, you're okay, I'm okay, we can do this, we can get through life's tough times. Very optimistic, very upbeat message all the time. But of course, that's only part of the story, and we as Christians should be upbeat and positive all the time and have joy, but there are other aspects to the faith that don't come through. I mean, you don't hear very much from Osteen about the downsides and the persecutions and the difficult times that you may face for being part of the faith. He'll talk very much about the downsides you might face in life, on your job, in your family, but there are downsides. I mean, as I mentioned in the article, there's no way to reconcile your best life now with the life of the martyrs, the people who are around the world being murdered for their faith. And that's not part of the message that Joel gets out there, and I think that's misleading in some way. But I think people are drawn to that upbeat. I mean, we live in a very tough world, a very depressing world sometimes, and I think that upbeat, optimistic energy comes through.
Do you think, some people paint him as a charlatan, that it's all a big ruse and that he's, laughing his way to the bank. I tend to fall into the camp that I think he sincerely believes what he teaches, even though, as you've said, I mean, there are obviously profoundly misguided elements of it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that he does seem to be sincere. I mean, the downside is that he has made a lot of money doing this, and that sends a signal that that he may be doing things that are that will maximize that issue, and that makes me concerned. But I do feel, from what I've watched of him and what I've seen, and I attended two events, he does appear to be sincere. He does sincerely believe it. But, of course, sincerity is not the test.
That's true. So, it's possible to be sincerely wrong. I am often.
So am I.
So let's talk about Francis for just a minute. Because, Francis, certainly, as you said, he was like an electric shock to you. He radiates that joy, but it's maybe a joy that has more gravity to it. Would you say that's fair?
I would say that's fair, yes. And, I always turn back and say, Francis was responsible for me coming back. That initial moment, there was so much joy, there was so much humbleness and humility and love that radiated. Now, there are times that as I listen to Francis over the last few years, I wish that he would be able to articulate certain things a little bit more clearly, because I think there tends to be sometimes messages that get mixed signals. But I think the bottom line is he does radiate joy and forgiveness and mercy and love. He is, as I've heard other people say, that at the bottom of it, a holy person, a holy man.
Mm. And I think his point is well taken, too, in terms of he's continually emphasized the need for those who bear the name of Christ to radiate joy. His letter, The Joy of the Gospel, that, Christians who walk around all the time looking depressed, not good representatives of the good news.
Totally agree. I think we have to, if there is a joy that comes from our faith, we have to be willing to share that and let it out. And I think that we are missing something if we are not radiating that.
But we don't need teeth whitener to do it, I guess.
Exactly. which is probably a very good description of Joel Osteen's ministry in that sense. There's a superficiality there, a sugaredness or a sweetness that forgets about the balanced meal that you need.
Absolutely. So do you think that, let's say there's a Catholic out there who, listen, they fully intend to remain Catholic. They go to Mass, but they like to read Osteen stuff or watch him. Do you think it's harmless or you think it's something to avoid?
I think that if you go in with your eyes open, it can be harmless. In fact, response to this article came back. I heard from a number of people who commented that there are a lot of Catholics, a lot of other Christians who will watch the show, watch the Mass that he has or the celebration he does every week, and uses that as almost as a self-help or a pump-me-up kind of thing. I don't think there's a danger in that if it's occasional and you're listening, but you have to come into it with your eyes open and know that you're only getting part of the story, and part of the story you may be getting may be wrong.
That's exactly right. Tom, we're out of time, unfortunately. Always flies by. Blessings to you and to your family and to your ministry.
Thank you so much, and you too. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute. It was Tom Zampino. Check out his work at Grace Pending and also via The Catholic Conspiracy. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Really enjoyed that conversation, Tom Zampino. Great insight. I just always think it's interesting to hear people's stories about how they found their way either into the Catholic Church or back to the Catholic Church. And, you know, the word Catholic means universal. And so there is a universality to the truth. You know, I say this to engaged couples all the time. We're talking about the truth about marriage, for example. I say, you know, it's not as if there's some copyright that, you know, the truth, property of the Roman Catholic Church. The Catholic Church bears witness to the truth. And this truth in its fullness can be found in the Catholic faith as the quintessential the most complete expression of this truth revealed to the world. But that doesn't mean that the truth is confined to the visible bounds of Catholicism, that every bit of truth is only found within books with a Neil Obstadt, what's the other word? It's escaping me right now. The imprimatur. There's truth that resonates with the human heart. And what we discover is, as I was telling engaged couples, you know, the kind of love that the Catholic Church associates with marriage is the kind of love that most people already want, right? We instinctively understand that fidelity is an aspect of married love. Doesn't mean we always live it. Doesn't mean there aren't outliers out there who want to have a so-called open marriage, which is an oxymoron if there ever was one. But by and large, the desire in the human heart is for faithful love because we've been wired for God. And so truth is going to be found to varying degrees in various places. And when you hear people's stories, looking back as they can see the stepping stones that seemed inconsequential perhaps at the time, but by God's providence and grace led to their either return to or entry into the Catholic Church, it's fascinating to see the various things that have been used. Like, as I've shared in my own story, the author Graham Greene, who was he himself a Catholic, but sort of a tortured Catholic who led a very bohemian sort of life, not exactly a model of Christian piety. And yet his novels, profoundly haunted by Catholic imagery, and it was really what cracked open a door. That's what Tom Zampino is saying Joel Osteen did. It cracked open a door that he was then able to by God's grace, enter into and perhaps widen ever more into the beauty and the fullness of the Catholic faith. So great to have Tom on, and look forward to having him on again sometime. Check out the article. I posted it on the show's Facebook page. 573-4BREAD-4, I am asking that question of the day. What do you think about Joel Osteen? 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. A friend of mine posting on his Facebook, David says, watching the Constitution of the United States of America being played out today. Today is the Electoral College vote, which is the actual constitutional vote, which will install Donald Trump as the 45th president in American history. It's been the same every 4 years. Happened when Obama was president-elect, when Bush Jr. was president-elect, when Clinton, and so forth and so on. It happens when there is a Republican being installed. It happens when there is a Democrat being installed. It is an objective process set up by our founding fathers that is not tilted towards any one candidate or party. Today, I invite you to watch history unfold as the 45th president in American history is officially elected. Then in about a month, watch the culmination of this process and see the 45th peaceful transition of power, something mostly foreign in the history of this world. Today's vote is part of that transition process. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's been certainly more talk than I've ever encountered before in the elections that I've been following about electors voting their conscience or not voting, you know, not casting a vote for Donald Trump and so forth. I don't think anything will come of it. And I do think it would provoke quite a constitutional crisis in our country were that to happen. So we'll see if there's, are people just going to bite their tongue, swallow hard, and do what they are directed to do? I guess we'll see. An interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal book review section this weekend. I happened to pick up a copy while I was down in North Carolina for my nephew's wedding. And maybe we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow. I'd love to have the guy on the program. The name of the article here says, a Russian fights for Stalin's victims. And you've got this great-grandson. His name is Denis Karagin. He is on a quest to expose a 1938 killing. And it's sparking a debate in Putin's Russia. 1938, the day my father was born, and the day his great-grandfather was summarily executed as an enemy of the state in the old Soviet Union. As it says here, nearly 80 years ago, Joseph Stalin's secret police shot Denis Karagin's great-grandfather, Stepan, and dumped the body here. Now Mr. Karagin has shaken Russia with a landmark investigation that he says has unmasked all those involved in the killing. He says, quote, they buried him here and thought the story was over, says Mr. Karagin, a fast-talking 34-year-old who shares the intense eyes that stare out from photographs of his great-grandfather. Stepan was a victim of the Soviet dictator's great terror against so-called enemies of the people. He'd been charged with spying for Japan, but after Stalin's death in 1955, Stepan's name was cleared. With that, they thought the matter was settled, said Mr. Karagin. I wanted to show that it wasn't. He spent 5 years tracking down documents in the archives of the security service and other state agencies. His research allowed him to piece together a chain of orders that incriminate, he says, some 30 people, from Stalin right down to the three alleged executioners. Now, there's more here, but I'm fascinated by this, by a guy who would be so committed to unearthing the truth 80 years later that he continues to fight and to spend time and resources in doing so. Now, you could easily be tempted as to say, look, there's a statute of limitations here, right? What difference is he going to make? What difference is it going to make how his great-grandfather died? His grandfather's dead. He's been dead for 80 years. The Soviet Union no longer exists, per se. Why continue to fight this battle? I think there's something admirable about it on a number of levels. One, it's the reality that truth has no statute of limitations. And until a society comes to grips with the truth about things, then it hasn't fully brought itself into repentance and reformation. I think that's true in here in the U.S. You go back and you look at some of the American corporate interests in Nazi Germany and with the eugenics movement and some of those things. Go. You want to see an eye-opening film? Go watch Ma'afa 21 that tells the story about the eugenics movement in the United States and those who were bankrolling some of Hitler's eugenic practices. Something that because we're the victors, supposedly, right, in the war, we never come to grips with the truth about our past. And whenever we don't come to grips with the truth, we're in danger of things repeating themselves. We see the same thing. Yes, the Soviet Union has died. But we also see a Putin who is not at all bashful about consolidating power. And whenever you have, you know, a guy like Denis Karagandin is that fly in the ointment. He's that prophetic presence that won't let the truth be swept under a rug. I think I also appreciate and find his work admirable because it's a reminder, again, it's that ancient reality of the blood of Abel crying out from the ground. The sneering face of Cain who rhetorically asks, am I my brother's keeper? And the reminder that, yes, we are each other's keepers. And no matter how much time has passed, somebody who's bearing witness to the dignity of the person and to the injustice, I find admirable. I'm going to see if I can get this guy on the show. I don't know if he speaks English or not. That'd be interesting if he didn't. I have to bone up on my Russian, I guess. Anyway, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking award. I mean, not What Were You Thinking. Spinning the Dalek Catechism wheel. It's a Monday. Bear with me. We go to random.org, our random number generator. We spin a number between 1 and 2865. Total number of paragraphs in the catechism. We've dialed up 568. Let's see what Providence has in store. We know, of course, that truth is never random, but always integrated within the panoramic totality of the faith. This is about the transfiguration of Christ in the section on the Creed. Christ's transfiguration aims at strengthening the apostles' faith in anticipation of his passion. The ascent onto the high mountain prepares for the ascent to Calvary. Christ, head of the church, manifests that his body contains and radiates in the sacraments the hope of glory. That's an interesting connection here, right? You got the transfiguration, which occurred on the mountain. Christ's appearance transfigured. It was an anticipation of his passion, preparation that his glory veiled under the bloody beating he would take in the crucifixion was truly present. But I like this line too, that Christ is the head of the church and he manifests what his body contains and radiates in these sacraments, the hope of glory. In other words, veiled under common material things, water, oil, bread, and wine. The transfiguring glory of Christ is hidden but real. Oh Lord, increase our faith. I'll be back with you tomorrow for another O Antiphon edition of the Mike Allen Show. Blessings to you that you've been listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.